I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess, and we're the Rambling Raven Puffs.
Because Potterheads are far too nuanced to be shoved into just one Hogwarts house.
Each week, we will cover two chapters in the saga of our favorite boy wizard.
All the while exploring literary themes, famous quotes, and even fanfic speculations.
To connect with us, your fabulous hosts, and other listeners, join our Facebook group, the Raven Puff Common Room.
Thank you for tuning in, grab your butterbeer, and enjoy the show.
Welcome again to the Rambling Raven Puffs.
Welcome to the show, everyone. I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess.
And today we're covering Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, Chapter 5, Diagon Alley, and Chapter 6, The Journey to Platform 9 and 3 Quarters. In these chapters, Harry indulges in the ultimate retail therapy at the hottest shopping center in London and takes a scenic train ride through the English and Scottish countryside.
Yes.
Yes. So your preliminary thoughts, Jess, do divulge.
Sure. You know, the first chapter, Diagon Alley, I forgot that there was like a little bit of time. Okay, I'm like rushing to the end. So, oh, no, I'm not. Yes, I am. Sorry. I forgot that Harry goes back and stays with the Dursleys for a while. And I was thinking, man, he had just like kind of an information onslaught. Like he finds out that, you know, he has all this money, he gets all this cool stuff, he realizes really how, what his name means in this world. And then he just like has to go sit in his room and just like wait, which I'm like a very anxiety riddled person, that would drive me crazy. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think a lot of people forget that because by the way they play it off in the movies, because again, and you know, a film just doesn't allow for that type of time lapse.
Right.
So yeah, so first chapter 5, Harry wakes up and he's thinking, oh, this was just a dream. Hagrid was just a dream. I'm going to wake up in my cupboard. But no, Hagrid is there. And then an owl is tapping on the window for the newspaper.
Yeah. Yes. Then there's the people being left alone. He remembered that Dursley liked to be left alone when reading the newspaper. And it just made me think about how irritated I get when I'm interrupted reading. So I can relate to him.
Yeah. And I'm just thinking, you know, I'm just curious why owls, like as the means of communication. So we've got owls in Harry Potter. We've got like ravens in Game of Thrones.
Yeah. All these like birds of, but Raven's a bird of prey too, right? I mean,
I don't know exactly what they're classified as. All I know is they're just, they're really, really smart.
Yeah. Yeah.
And one of like the like super famous ravens at the Tower of London has gone missing.
No.
Yes. No. No one knows what happened yet.
There's some pretty funny stories about ravens just kind of doing weird, quirky things, or like people befriending ravens. I know I read about a girl in England who like befriended a raven, and she would, the raven would bring her little treasures and stuff. It's kind of cool.
No, yeah, they're like really smart, and they kind of, it kind of defeats the Descartesian view that souls, you have to have language to have a soul or have a higher cognitive ability. But ravens can do all sorts of crazy, like difficult problem solving, and they don't have language.
Yeah, that's an interesting point of view. I did not know that. I don't think I agree with it, but I'm looking at a picture of a raven. They live 10 to 15 years. Well, we have, we're the Raven Puffs. So we get some ravens here in the Harry Potter story, but we definitely are like pretty owl focused in these beginning pages.
And actually, you know, that's the funny thing about our title name, like Raven Puffs, but Ravenclaw, the insignia is actually an eagle.
Oh, really? Okay.
It really, like any cheap-ass Walmart, like, keychain that shows a raven instead of an eagle, they're, like, posers.
I didn't know that. I just assumed it was a raven, so, okay.
No, don't you remember the wax seal on Harry's letter? It has the badger, the eagle, the lion, and the snake.
You know, I guess I, like, just my bit of flakiness. I just was like, I mean, I guess an eagle showed up in there. I don't know why. But oh, that's okay. I'm glad you said that. So now, but that's really confusing. So
yeah, it is very confusing. Yeah, but we digress. Basically, yes. It's the, we have the owls, and he's like, like Harry doesn't know what's going on, and Hagrid's just like, pay him. Hagrid grunted in the sofa. What? He wants paying for delivering the paper. Look in the pockets. And so Harry has to pay the owl 5 canets.
I love that. I thought that was...
And he has, I imagine the little owl having a little, like, velvet purple pouch that he puts his coins in.
That's, I don't know. I loved all that. I love owls. I love birds of prey. I saw a falcon earlier today in our backyard, which I live in the city, so that was kind of a weird, like, weird thing to see. It's a very bird of prey day today, I guess, based on our conversation.
I see lots of crows and ravens. I have heard owls. I've never actually seen one, even though I live pretty, you know, out in the boonies, out in nature. Seen plenty of eagles, vultures, falcons, but yeah, never owls. I think, you know, they're just really in the early hours in the morning where I'm fast asleep.
That's what, you know, that's funny you say that, because I was just kind of like, I knew you lived out, you know, in the woods areas, and I was like, oh, you probably see owls all the time. So now I know that is not the case.
Yeah, the only owl I actually have seen was, there's this one house by the road, had a whole bunch of cages. Wow. And I looked one day and they had an eagle owl, like, in a cage. And I'm like, I hope they have the appropriate license for that.
Yeah. Oh my goodness.
But anyway, so they have a little bit of breakfast and then they head off. And basically we don't interact with the Dursleys again, which I'm a little bit surprised.
Yeah. That was, so they, right. They kind of just... No commentary from the Dursleys. It was just kind of I was kind of waiting for that, like another little altercation or something before they took off, but that didn't happen.
No, they just left. And Hagrid, it becomes very obvious that, in essence, Hagrid's wand, or what was left of his wand, has basically been hidden in his little pink umbrella.
Yes. Oh, and okay.
And that's what he's, because that's the thing he's using to, like, perform all this magic that he typically would not do.
Okay. That's, what a smart disguise to put it in an umbrella. I really like that. That was, because his wand comes back. They talk about his wand when we get, oh, we're at Diagon Alley in the, it's Diagon, right? Is that how
I say it? Yeah, Diagon Alley. Again, play on words, diagonally.
Okay. Diagon Alley. Yeah. Well, we kind of get some of a little bit of backstory on Hagrid and his wand there.
Yes, but first we, while they're having breakfast, they discuss the banks. And wizards have banks? Just the one, Gringotts, run by goblins. Harry dropped the bit of sausage he was holding. Goblins? Yeah, so you'd be mad to try and rob it. Never mess with goblins, Harry.
Okay, I have a question, and maybe we're going to visit this about the goblin bank. Is there, and maybe we're going to talk about this in a little bit, so I'll hold off.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So yeah, so basically, you know, Hagrid's just throwing all these words out of, like, magical creatures that up until last night were just, you know, figments of human imagination. And then Harry's starting to realize, wait, they're actually real. Like, these things do exist.
Yeah, because, you know, I thought that was, well, he says this later, but I think it's kind of, it's an appropriate thing to bring up now. He, for a while, there is like, maybe this is a really, really mean practical joke that the Dursleys are playing on me. And I thought that was really interesting, but the fact that he thinks that they're that diabolical, I guess, it says a lot.
Yeah, and I think it's, and the only thing that kind of deters him from that sort of line of thinking is that the Dursleys have no sense of humor. So he doesn't question their ability to do it on terms of its level of cruelty.
Right.
He just knows, just by the nature of how they dish out their cruelty, they would not, again, do something like this that's so out there and so, like, detrimental to their, like, image of normality.
Right. And I highlighted this part of it. I said, might this not all be some huge joke that the Dursleys had cooked up? If Harry hadn't known that the Dursleys had no sense of humor, he might have thought so. So he kind of has that fleeting thought. And then he's like, no, these people have no sense of humor. So it can't be that game. And then they get to the leaky
cauldron. But first, it's really funny, you know, can you imagine a Hagrid-like person on the subway?
No. And that really kind of messed with my mind, because I'm like, does he, you know, there's a lot of things appearing that aren't there and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, is he appearing in a way that's less gargantuan than he is? Or is he, it sounded like he's still pretty, like, I don't know, maybe he's like Andre the Giant in, but he seems to be bigger than that. I thought that was a little weird.
I don't know. That is, I actually never thought about that, that, you know, we think of Hagrid just doing very rudimentary, you know, magic to get for travel, but it may very be possible he's using some sort of disillusionment charm to draw less attention to himself. That doesn't remove it completely, but at least enough where people aren't, you know, thinking this is supernatural.
Yeah, I mean, at least that's, I guess, in my mind, that's kind of, there was a little bit of manipulation there. I mean, he could still be big, but just not as big as I imagine he's described.
Yeah, and I love how he, you know, he's on the, sitting down on the subway, like, knitting something like a, that seems like a circus, as big as like a circus tent.
Right, yeah, he's got some, I don't know, there were some really interesting little descriptions of how, I liked that he kind of was pointing out all the things that he was like, this is ridiculous, like a parking meter, he's like, muggles, oh my gosh, like how silly those.
Yeah, it's, I have an interesting story about a parking meter. So I went on this trip with a bunch of kids, like a sort of school trip to San Francisco. And one of the guys, I think his name, remember his name was Neil. He was goofing off, not watching what he was doing. And so like he hit his toe on a parking meter, like the base of a parking meter, but just did it at such an angle that his whole body came forward and then he hit his head on the parking meter.
Oh my gosh.
What a horrible... Blood was spouting everywhere and he was fine. It was just that usual, you know, there are a lot of blood vessels in your head, so it looks a lot worse than it actually right. is. And then a taxi driver was like, you need a ride to the emergency room.
Oh my gosh. That...
just like, and in fact, actually it was not a school trip, it was a church trip. And so we all got this thing, we all like laughed about it, that God smited Neil through a parking meter.
That's pretty intense. Poor Neil, he's probably like, man, I hope everybody forgot that. And then, no, we did, yeah. Amy did not. That's funny.
Yeah. Parking meters aside, I really like this little bit about, what does the Ministry of Magic do? Well, their main job is to keep it from the muggles that there's still witches and wizards up and down the country. Why? Why? Blimey, Harry. Everyone be wanting magic solution to their problems. Nah, we're best left alone. It's so logical and it makes sense. And it's like, oh, of course, you know, they like to keep themselves on the DL, especially since there are so few of them compared to the rest of the population. But I think it says a lot about, you know, this is a society or a world, wizarding world that lives within our modern world. And they're basically in seclusion. And naturally, as we'll learn in the other books, that seclusion certainly has caused some resentments that have manifested themselves into fascism, which we'll get to later.
Wow. Yeah. Well, I'm glad you brought that little line, that line up, because I highlighted that as well. And I thought, like, that's really true. Everybody would be wanting magical solutions to their problems. So I can't even imagine the path you could take some of that.
Or even like if you had a war with magic and nuclear weapons.
Oh my gosh. I don't even want to think about it. I don't think we would be here very long.
Harry says, Hagrid, did you say there are dragons at Gringotts? Well, so they say, said Hagrid. Crikey, I'd like a dragon. You'd like one? Wanted one ever since I was a kid. And I'm just like, me too, Hagrid.
I have another, when we get to the shops, there's other mentions of dragons. And I had a couple questions for you when we get there.
But yeah, it doesn't take very long, you know, Harry reviews his, you know, school supply list. And so basically they get into the Leaky Cauldron. And so the Leaky Cauldron is a dingy little pub that serves as the gateway between Muggle London and the magical shopping center that is Diagon Alley.
So I imagine there's a Leaky Cauldron somewhere, like I'm guessing there's one and Orlando I've never been to Harry Potter World, but I just kind of envision that. So this is, if I'm understanding correctly, this is a place that is visible to muggles, but like probably not frequented by them. It's the pathway to get to Diagon Alley. But so, I mean, maybe I'm just missing something here. Can Muggles go in here?
I think they can. I think the idea is, you know, again, there's probably some certain maybe spells on it that, like, just a random muggle would be like, oh, I'm going to get a pint specifically here. I'm sure there are some enchantments to kind of deter them from that. But I think it's something that they can see. And as you know, there are lots of wizarding children of muggle parents. And so I have the sense that, you know, muggles can, if they're really looking for it and it's know it's there, then, like, the magic is such that they can see it and they can go with their wizarding children into Diagon Alley.
Okay. All right. Thank you for clarifying that for me.
Yeah. And Harry gets his first taste of fame in the Leaky Cauldron.
Yeah. There, some people were so excited to meet him. They, you know, this Deldalus Diggle.
Deldalus Diggle.
How do you say that again?
Deldalus, I think.
Deldalus. Okay. Deldalus Diggles. I've seen you before and you bowed to me once in a shop and then he remembers. Did you hear that? He remembers me.
Yeah, so, and is that's Diggle is the person that McGonagall mentioned in the first chapter, like with all the wizards really lacking discretion and their excitement that Voldemort is gone. And she's like, I bet it was that Diggle. Never had much sense.
That's, well, good throwback there. I missed that. So, and then we have this gentleman who is stuttering because he's had a shocking experience.
Yeah, it's Professor Quirrell who will be teaching Harry defense against the dark arts. And yeah, he's in Diagon Alley for a new book on vampires. And he's just so skittish and he's like, you know, not that you need defense against the dark arts, you know, right? Nick, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. And it was just like cringeworthy.
Yeah. If I'm thinking of that, he is intends to be Harry's professor, but does not end up being Harry's professor, if I'm remembering things right. The other thing, y'all know, if anybody's listened to Sublimely Gothic, I love my vampires. So they say he met vampires in the Black Forest, and there was a nasty bit of trouble with a hag. Never been the same since. So vampires are not like sparkly and sexy in this series. So good to have that at the jump.
I feel like in the early years, Harry, the writer, is throwing like these words about to show like just, oh, like just to emphasize, you know, he thought none of these creatures existed and suddenly they all exist. But in reality, do we see very many vampires in the series? No, we don't.
Okay. It's interesting to, again, when we get to the part where he gets back to the Dursleys, like I cannot imagine like information overload. That basically being a person and then finding out, oh, hey, all of this magic and things that you were taught were not real. Actually, they are. And you're a big deal in that world. Maybe it's good that he went back to the Dursleys to kind of compartmentalize everything before he went to
this
Hogwarts.
This is true. And internalize everything before he had an overload.
Right. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So they finally go to the back of the Leaky Cauldron and Hagrid taps the brickway and the archway appears for Diagon Alley. And so, again, we get all sorts of descriptions about the fabulous, you know, shops. Which shop would you want to go into first, Jess?
I think I'm going to guess maybe you might want to. Well, maybe not. I want to go to the bookstore. I forgot the name.
Yeah, Flourish and Blots. That's definitely where I would want to go to.
Good. Glad we're on the same. Yes, for sure. That's where.
Yeah. Harry says, like, you know, and Lisa, our guest last time, was saying like all those books, those few books at the Dursley's house, no one had touched them. And saying that even Dudley, who doesn't read at all, would want to get his hands on these books.
Yeah, right. Because they've got, I mean, there's all kinds of interesting. Well, his reading list for school is interesting. I'll have to go back and ask you a question about that reading list. Because the only Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, you know, has kind of had another life.
I bought Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, like the original that was just like the textbook before like the whole like spin-off franchise ever became a thing.
So these are there are like people have or someone has made these into some of these into books, or I was just curious.
Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, yes, that has been made into a book, and then Quidditch Throughout the Ages, that has been made into a book.
Okay. Interesting. Interesting.
Yep. And so, let's see. But before they can go into the hardcore shopping, they have to stop by Gringotts. And Gringotts is a super fancy bank. And there's a poem at the entranceway, basically.
Right. I'm flipping to that page.
Enter, stranger, but take heed of what awaits the sin of greed. For those who take but do not earn must pay most dearly in their turn. So if you seek beneath our floors a treasure that was never yours, thief, you have been warned, beware of finding more than treasure there.
Interesting. And this is the dragon that supposedly nobody's ever seen it, but maybe there's a dragon that kind of...
Yeah, maybe theoretically they're using dragons to guard maybe some of the super secretive vaults, I guess. But a lot of it is just enchantments, as we see.
Yeah. Yeah.
So then Harry comes face to face with an actual goblin.
Yes.
And they are, you know... pointy ears, like really long, elongated noses and spindly teeth, spindly fingers. Okay, so I have never come across this in any of my rereadings of this, but I have read an article about how you can make some arguments that the goblins are an subconscious anti-Semitic image.
Okay, good. I mean, not good that that is a thing, but good that I remember when reading this, I thought that there was some of that, like some undertones there. And I felt like having reread this, I felt that that was more in the movie than that I'm reading this. But maybe I just, you know, I don't know. But I had heard that as well with them. I don't know if that was intentional or not, but
I don't think there's certainly from Harry's perspective, I don't think it was intentional. I think he's just, you know, explaining, you know, and maybe he exaggerated their features because when he remembered it, he was just so shocked by everything.
Right.
There is something to be said about this classical look of not just Jews, but just how, you know, miserly people like Scrooge look like.
Right. Yeah,
there is a stereotype of what people look like if you're miserly and handling on a amount of money. And the unfortunate reality is that part of that does stem from the fact that Jews, a lot of time in societies, were the bankers because they were the only ones that would do more modern banking practices like loans and stuff because the Christians like considered that bad and usury, and yet society couldn't function without it. And so a lot of Jews were bankers, like providing this service that no one else would do, and then they get talked shit about for it.
Yeah, that's okay. Thank you for that bit of history there, because I didn't know what the origin of that derogatory label was put on them. So very interesting. So I think that, you know, again, since I think I'm adopting your intention reading this as Harry's like memoirs, I think that is just like, there's some goblins and they're kind of weird looking. I mean, I guess I don't know what racism was like in Harry's life. I'm guessing, you know, if we did want to talk about that, I'm guessing the Dursleys probably were not very open-minded, we have seen. So
mm-hmm. Yeah, again, and we'll get into goblins later because it's, you know, by the second book it'll be interesting to compare the goblins with the house elves.
Okay. Yeah.
So yeah, but overall the goblins, you know, they run the bank, and so they have this precarious relationship with wizards where they don't seem to have maybe all the same rights or privileges, but they are able to get around it and still make themselves useful within the society and make a profit because they run the banks.
Right, right. Cool. I mean, whatever. The banks are, we don't need, this is not a banking podcast, so we won't go into banks, but.
Yeah, so basically Harry goes into his vault and he has all this gold.
Yeah, like an obscene amount, like stacks on stacks on stacks of heaps of columns of silver and heaps of little brown knuts, mounds of gold coins. I just imagined DuckTales, like the cartoon. And
Scrooge McDuck.
Yes, that's what I kind of was like.
The gold coins.
Exactly.
Yes, well, and again, it's part of that, you know, it's the ultimate poetic justice for the orphan who has been left all this money by his parents.
Right. Which, do we ever learn kind of more about that? I don't, what was it inherited? Was it something they earned? Like, and maybe I was thinking too deeply into it. I've had some conversations recently about generational wealth and things like that with people. So I was like, how did he come about this? I mean, other than, you know, kind of being a younger person reading this, it's like, oh, cool. He doesn't have to, he has basically a reverse life in this book. He was dirt poor living under a cupboard. And now he's like, he can buy everything on the cart on the way to Hogwarts and whatever. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about that later. But is there anything later on about kind of his money?
Well, within the hardcore canon of the seven books, no. What okay. I can tell you of what has been disclosed later online and stuff is that, you know, Harry came from, you know, the Potters were a pureblood family, so they had a little bit of wealth, I think, in life, you know, anyway, kind of like the Malfoys. But also, Harry's grandfather was a really good potion maker and made, like, his fortune because of this very specific, like, hair product potion.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Like, something like that. And so their wealth just, like, totally exploded because of that.
Good enough for me.
Certainly, you know, his father didn't live long enough to, like, have a career and, you know, stack up his own money, really. So all that is, like, the generational wealth of the Potters.
Okay, that makes sense, because that's the other thing I was kind of fighting in my head with. I was like, Lily and James were not old when they died. So.
Yeah, despite how they cast them in the movies.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
So yeah, as you said, it's just complete 180 flip where Harry had nothing and now he has everything. He has wealth, he has fame, he has everything in the wizarding world. And again, Hagrid is not very subtle because it's like, I need to get you the you-know-what in rooms in Vault 713. And it's like, Hagrid, okay, couldn't you have, like, had Harry go with the goblin to his, like, separate vault, and the goblin could have helped Harry, like, with his vault, and then while he was doing that, he could have slipped away and gotten the whatever in Vault 713?
Yeah, there's a little bit of I don't know, there's a little bit of trust there. But, okay, this is more questions about Harry Potter from me to you. I highlighted something really extraordinary had to be inside this top security vault. Do we find out what that is?
Oh, we do find out what it is. Okay. Oh, I'm so happy you're so unspoiled.
I'm just suffering from, I guess, memory loss. Now, is it in this book or is it in future books?
It is in this book.
I just forgot that part. Okay, good. I'll be surprised.
Okay, wonderful. So, yeah, and then, yeah, Hagrid, like, oh, I'm so important. Like, Dumbledore trusts me. And it's like, then shut up, Hagrid.
Yeah, he just...
Yeah, don't blow the one, like, top secret mission that Dumbledore gives you.
Right.
Yes. I would not fancy, like, the ride on, like, the mine carts in Gringotts.
I can totally empathize with Hagrid here because I love to read. My husband loves to take car trips and I cannot read while we drive. So,
no, me neither.
Oh man. I have my bestie friend, he reads and his husband drives all the time. And I'm like, I am so jealous of you. So I totally can relate to Hagrid in this situation.
Yeah. And for me, I can relate to him as well. Like, it's kind of a weird inverse thing where, my motion sickness on airplanes is actually getting better as I get older, where I don't need to take Dramamine as much. But on the flip side, my motion sickness in cars has gotten so much worse.
Mine just keeps getting worse. I have to wear like special ear. It's annoying. So I guess that's part of being a sensitive person, I guess. But
yeah, well, thank God for audiobooks, because that's what I was doing when Amen. I pre-pandemic times when I actually drove to work.
Yes. Yeah. Me too.
So the first shop that they go to is Madame Malkin's robes for all occasions, because Harry needs his school robes. And who does he meet while he's there?
Oh, the charming Draco Malfoy.
Yeah. And definitely there's a lot of people who, like, are surprised by this. At least, you know, people only watch the movies because we only get Draco, again, for sake of time and pacing, we only get Draco when we get on the train or at school. And then people realize, oh, we actually met Malfoy, like, much earlier than this. And I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, I like this introduction better because it's a little, I mean, you kind of, if anybody with any like kind of knowing anything about Harry Potter, you realize, and he's just a straight up snob. I just straight up snob.
Yeah, he is the ultimate snob, and you know, just his whole name, Malfoy, that mal means bad, and foy is kind of like the French, like Latin, like foi, like faith, so literally bad faith.
Oh, okay. I did not know that.
Yeah, so, and then, yeah, he's just a snob. He's like, "You play Quidditch?" "No," said Harry. "I do. Father says it's a crime if I'm not picked to play for my house, and I must say I agree. Maybe I'll bully him into buying one for me, and I'll smuggle it in somehow."
Yeah, very. I was like, well, we are very different people, and that is why he's a Slytherin and I'm a Hufflepuff. And then he's like slams Hufflepuff, which I didn't appreciate
Yeah,
that at
dissing
all.
on Hufflepuff. But I
I
think one thing that the way he says, "I'll bully father into buying me one," which again, it's like Dudley. It's a very indulgent form of parenting. And again, one can make the argument that it's in its own way is just a bit abusive. But it just
know.
says something that, you know, despite, you know, all their arrogance and stuff, like the Malfoys, they do actually like care about each other.
That's good to know. I didn't. I mean, I that line was stood out to me as well. I think I'll bully father into getting me one. And I know some people who talk about other people like that. I mean, that's just it always just kind of makes me go, ugh, you know?
Gross.
Yeah.
Imagine being in Hufflepuff. I think I'd leave, wouldn't you?
No, I'll stay. Thank you.
We're getting Harry's 11-year-old perspective on this, and you know, as the story goes on, and by extension, as the stories have been, you know, put to rest, you know, finished in 2007, that the fandom has sort of come to balance, you know, the treatment of the houses. Because, but definitely from an 11-year-old's perspective, it's true that, you know, the virtues of Hufflepuff are much more subtle. They are not status seeking or glory seeking or like definitive in the same way that the other houses are. And that's why they get a lot of flack.
That makes sense. That makes sense too. Yeah, I don't know. And I was reading that and I was like, I don't think there's anything bad with that, but I could see also how Malfoy sees that, all of those as you know, signs of weakness or something like
Yeah, it's the typical you see kindness as weakness.
Yeah,
Bullshit.
right. Amen.
Yeah. And then Malfoy starts dissing on Hagrid, who is like waving to Harry from the window with like an ice cream cone.
Which I'm again, I think Lisa in our previous podcast m mentioned Harry's kind of ability to stand up to people that I know I didn't have as a kid. So I appreciated him kind of defending Hagrid here because some, you know, he could have that'll come up later when I talk about my like fan fiction. He definitely stands up for him, which I think is admirable, and I guess that's why he becomes who he becomes. But he could have just been like, yeah, I mean, what a weirdo. I guess a lesser person would have said that. I don't know, or somebody that was more worried about fitting in. Harry just still defended his friend, which I
Yeah,
thought
well, I
that was
think
great.
Harry is so much kind of in shock mode still that he's not thinking that far ahead. And but also I think there's also the sense of, you know, the Dursleys, you know, had some power over him, again, denying him food and all sorts of terrible crap. Like this random snob in a robe shop is like, he can't do crap to me.
Right. Well, good.
Yeah. And then we already know that Malfoy is a little racist, fascist prat, and it's like, but your parents were our kind, weren't they? They were a witch and wizard, if that's what you mean. I really don't think they should let the other sort in, do you? They're just not the same. They've never been brought up to know our ways. Some of them have never even heard of Hogwarts until they get the letter. Imagine.
Yeah, I made notes on that as well, but they were our company, like you said. That is he's showing his true colors there. And this is not really a and I like again, I like Harry's response. Kind of like, you know, I don't know if it's naivety at this point or he's just saying like they were a witch and wizard, if that's what you mean. Kind of like dismissive of that comment, which was good.
Well, again, he's a book kid, but basically he's parroting the things that he know that we know his parents have said. And the fact that he thinks it's okay to just say this in public to a total stranger. You know, just kind of the sense of the subtlety of, you know, Voldemort was terrible and fascist and basically wizard Hitler, and he got, you know, quote unquote defeated, but all these underlying issues and ideologies that he represented. They didn't go away.
But, right. It sounds like a world we're living in a little bit, maybe. I don't know.
Don't get me started. It's
like, yeah. But that, yeah, you're totally right. I think that's something that's easy, at least for me, to forget when reading this, is that these are kids. So they are parroting what they have heard in their households. So it's obviously Malfoy's parents have, you know, put this influence on him. And that's why he feels confident to go out and say those things to a complete stranger in a very public place.
Mm-hmm. So finally, Harry's able to leave him without answering any further questions, has his ice cream with Hagrid, and he's like, what's Quidditch? And he's like, a sport. And what's Hufflepuff and Slytherin? Schoolhouses. There's four. Everyone says Hufflepuff's a lot of duffers, but I bet I'm in Hufflepuff, said Harry gloomily. But I'm like, Hufflepuff is awesome.
Yeah. Stop knocking it, everybody. Goodness. Yeah, well, yeah, and he just doesn't have a full grasp on what any of this really means yet. Just he knows that there's a negative connotation based on this encounter, I guess. Really, right?
Yeah. And so they go on to proceed with Harry's shopping. He goes to Flourish and Blotts, which, again, best bookshop in the world. I was debating whether this podcast would be named some sort of playoff of the Flourish and Blotts bookstore name, but we decided Rambling Raven Pups. Yep, and then Hagrid had to drag Harry away from curse and counter curses, bewitch your friends and befuddle your enemies by Professor Vindictus Virundian.
That's funny. That was, I'm trying to find out how to curse Dudley. I'm not saying that's a good idea, but you're not to use magic in the Muggle world except in a very special circumstances. In any way, you couldn't work any of those curses yet. I'm changing his language. You'll need a lot more study before you can get to that level. I think it's kind of funny.
And what I appreciate about writer Harry is the detail he gives, like throughout the series, he gives these details of these funny names and funny book titles.
Yeah. Yeah,
because so many other fantasy writers would just totally like blow over this, but he gives like very specific details of the book title and who wrote it.
Yeah, it's very well thought through. I like that.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, they go to the apothecary and... What sort of magical ingredient would you want if you went to this apothecary?
Oh, gosh. I thought it was kind of... I'm glad that Hagrid wouldn't let him buy a solid gold cauldron, because first of all, it says, you know, what to buy on his list. But also, it's kind of like he's sticking out like a sore thumb already. It's almost like you don't need to flaunt your wealth there. I don't know. I'm kind of... The feathers kind of appeal to me a little bit. I don't know why, but I think that would be kind of cool. But what about you?
I would want the like whole unicorn horn.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. That would be
like this. It'd be like this swirly, translucent, like opal color.
That would be pretty. The glittering beetle eyes. Like, I don't want to do anything with that. Thank you very much. That's how I felt about that. Ugh. Mm-hmm. But the unicorn horn would be horn.
Yes, that would be pretty dope. And it's so sweet. Hagrid decides to get Harry a birthday present and gets him a pet.
Yeah, and an owl. Like, how cool is that? It's kind of a resourceful gift, too, because they can use it. And I think he mentions that he can send letters. Eventually, he'll have somebody to send letters to. Yeah, that's
we're all happy. And again, Hedwig is just as much as a companion as she is a sort of utilitarian messenger carrier. But also, like, don't be dissing on cats. Like, they may make you sneeze, Hagrid, but it's not your cat.
Yay, there is, we are very strong agreement. There is nothing wrong with a cat. And I mean, I don't know, an owl or a cat, both are pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. So Harry ends up getting a snowy owl. I have never seen a snowy owl in my life.
Me neither. I've seen a barred owl, but I have not seen a snowy
barn owl. Barn owl, eagle owl, maybe even a screech owl, but I've never seen, you know, like only in like captivity and stuff, but never even in captivity have I seen a snowy owl.
One day we'll see.
And then finally we get to Ollivander's.
This is a little more kind of complex experience in the shop. But in the, you know, we have the books. He gets the books. He gets his stuff from the apothecary. He has the encounter with Malfoy in the robe shop. But this one is kind of, this shopping experience is a little bit more nuanced and, you know, a lot more story comes out. Mm-hmm. Pretty important detail.
Yeah. So it says, like, the sign is like Ollivander's maker of fine wands since 382 BC.
Wow.
And so this is the 90s, so they haven't become politically correct enough to use BCE.
Okay.
Which, I don't know, like, just, this just makes me think of, even as a pagan, even as someone who's not Christian anymore, like, I'm not crazy about the BCE before Common Era, because it means, like, no matter what you call it, you're still basing our entire notion of history around Christ.
Yeah, to me, it's just, like, and I don't, it gets confusing to me to put some of those, all of that on there. I don't know. It's also like, I was just talking, this is totally off tangent, but talking about scheduling meetings and, you know, since everything is virtual now, I'm kind of dealing with the time zones of like coordinating three different time zones. It's a pain. So personally, I just wish it was simpler so it would make a little more sense. But can you tell me again? So BC is before, it's before Christ, right? That's what that means.
Yeah. And AD meant like after the death of Christ.
Okay. And I mean, that's what I thought. What was the intention with the adding the E to the end of that?
Like literally to change it, like BCE now means before Common Era, like basically trying to de-emphasize the notion of, again, the Christian-centric view of, you know, Western society, which I understand is fair to a certain extent. You know, I can get behind, you know, some element of that, but I feel like in that sense, it's like, it doesn't matter if you're trying to like call it something different, it still doesn't change that we're using Christ's death.
Right.
And, you know, presence on this world as the means by which we record everything.
Right, right.
Just my little tangent about, like, I still wish we could use BC, even though I'm not even Christian anymore, because I feel like it doesn't matter if you didn't change the actual nature of how we tell time.
Yes, that makes sense.
Okay. Then again, we get into Ollivanders, and Ollivanders is really old, and he's kind of like a tailor. He has all these, like, measurements and is taking all these measurements of Harry.
Yeah, with his arm and stuff like that. That was kind of interesting, and Harry's kind of like, what am I doing? I have no idea what's going on.
And basically, Mr. Ollivander has a sort of, like, encyclopedic memory of every wand that he has sold to every person ever.
That's amazing. Yeah, and he gets very specific with the ingredients in the wand too, which is pretty, I just thought that was kind of cool. And I would like to, you know, I think you could spend a lot of time dissecting the each ingredient inside the wand and its meaning and the make of the wand.
Yeah, like he can in an instant spout off exactly what his parents' wands were.
Yeah, that's very, he is very passionate about his work.
Yeah, and he even spouts off Hagrid's wand.
Right, and then that's when we kind of learn that his wand was destroyed or broken in half, right?
Mm-hmm. He's like, I still got the pieces, but you don't use them, said Mr. Ollivander sharply. Oh, no, sir, said Hagrid quickly. Harry noticed he gripped his pink umbrella very tightly as he spoke.
I mean, of course, you have a wand.
Again, subtlety, not one of Hagrid's fortes.
No, not at all.
So he gets to Harry and is like trying all sorts of wands, like one after the other. And like Ollivander's like really getting off on really enjoying how tricky Harry is. And then finally he's like, here, why don't you try this wand? Holly and Phoenix feather, 11 inches, nice and supple. And this ends up being the wand for Harry.
So as a pagan, a phoenix feather, I know what a phoenix is, but is there some significance with holly that would kind of relate to why that was a key ingredient in that wand?
In my really old, like, podcast that I did that was all pagan references, I believe holly, like a phoenix feather, kind of has some connotations of like rebirth.
Okay. I thought holly was like maybe fertility or something. I wasn't.
Yeah. I don't remember holly as much, but what I do remember is that Hagrid's wand is oak, and oak makes sense for Hagrid because oak is so much in a symbolism of strength and fortitude.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Yeah. So that's why Hagrid as the giant guy gets the strong wand.
They don't specify the wood type here, do they?
For Harry's?
Harry.
Harry, that it's holly.
Oh, that's okay. Sorry. I was thinking it was like the like a holly wreath, like the leaves or something. Never mind.
No. Okay. There's only like really one ingredient in wands. Like it's either the dragon's heartstrings, the unicorn hair, or the phoenix feather. And so that's basically encased in this bit, in this long, thin piece of wood.
Okay. It's all making sense to me. Thank you very much.
Yes. And what is so fancy about Harry's wand?
Are we going to talk about how it was also the same exact wand that caused the scar? Is that where we're going?
Yeah, that's where we're going.
Okay.
So the wood is not the same, but the cores are the same. Phoenix feather that is in Harry's wand, that phoenix, that specific bird, also gave a feather for another wand, and that phoenix feather was in Voldemort's wand.
Spooky.
Yeah, so super surreal. And I will say that Voldemort's wands, you know, Ollivander tells us 13 and a half inches, U. Curious how these things happen. It makes sense for Voldemort to have a wand made out of U because, you know, U can be a little toxic. Mm. And yew trees are like possibly one of the oldest living organisms on this planet.
Okay, I didn't. That's
like there are yew trees that have lived thousands of years.
Wow.
Like, so, and that goes into Voldemort's whole kick on, I need to escape death, blah, blah, blah. So it makes sense symbolically that the wood of his wand was from a yew tree.
Okay. Thank you for that. That's an interesting detail related to that wand specific.
Yeah. And again, as knowledgeable as Mr. Ollivander is, we don't know. Harry is kind of debating whether he likes them or not because, you know, after all, he must not be named, did great things. Terrible, yes, but great. Harry shivered.
That reminds me of, like, a lot of people when they refer to Hitler or when they talk about Hitler, they'll be like, but he was a great leader. He got a lot of people on board. Like, to me, that was kind of a similar, that's what that reminded me of, is that kind of sentiment.
Well, it's just how we define even figures in history, like Alexander the Great or Catherine the Great. Great is not a moral marker. It's purely power-based.
Exactly.
So he paid seven gold galleons for his wand. Mr. Ollivander bowed him from his shop. And so basically, before Harry leaves, he and Hagrid share a hamburger together, which I thought was so sweet and wholesome.
It is very sweet and wholesome and very kind of not muggly, not wizardy, just kind of like a nice little thing. And then he goes back to the Dursleys.
Yeah, and Hagrid lets Harry leave and get to like Surrey from London on his own on the train. And honestly, like, if I were Hagrid, given to the really bad reception and realizing how crappy the Dursleys were in not preparing Harry, if I were Hagrid, I would have walked him all the way up to the Dursleys' door.
Yeah, that was a little curious that he just kind of said, all right, good luck, see you in a month, and then kind of let him go on his own. This is the part that I didn't really clearly remember, and it also really surprised me. It was just like the little interlude of the Dursleys, it being at the Dursleys, and I don't know. It's not how I remembered it.
The train pulled out to the station. Harry wanted to watch Hagrid until he was out of sight. He rose in his seat and pressed his nose against the window, but he blinked and Hagrid had gone. So how is Hagrid getting around so fast? Did he disapparate or what?
I don't know. So I think that umbrella is up to some tricks.
Yeah, I don't think I really thought about this too much before. And again, Hagrid does have a lot of weaknesses and gets, you know, flack about not being like the sharpest tool in the shed. But now that I'm thinking about it, I think Hagrid, maybe part of it is an act that he pretends to be, at least when it comes to his pure magical ability. I think he can do maybe more advanced magic than maybe he lets on.
Yeah, and that's, I think people do that sometimes. They kind of don't really want to share just exactly how much they know because it kind of grants them a certain level of access in a way to play into the perception that people already have of him. I don't know.
And then we move on to chapter 6, the journey from platform 9 3/4. Harry's last month with the Dursleys wasn't fun. True, Dudley was now so scared of Harry he wouldn't stay in the same room, while Aunt Petunia and Uncle Vernon didn't shut Harry in his cupboard, force him to do anything, or shout at him. In fact, they didn't speak to him at all. Half terrified, half furious, they acted as though any chair with Harry in it were empty. Although this was an improvement in many ways, it did become a bit depressing after a while.
Sure. Yeah. No acknowledgement at all versus, you know, I think about people when they want attention, you know, in some ways, with, especially with kids, it's positive attention or, you know, they'll start rebelling because at least it's attention. Here they're just giving him a thing.
Mm-hmm. And so Harry coops himself up in his room with all his books and is just like reading his books into the night, which we'll get to later in this chapter, because also in this chapter, you know, we meet Hermione Granger.
Right, yeah.
And Hermione, you know, she's the sort of like brainy sort of person and knows everything. But honestly, I feel like maybe it kind of would have made more sense to Harry to be a little more studious, because again, just by the nature of he was deprived from this knowledge for so long, that he would maybe not to the same extreme as Hermione, but that he would dig into magic and not see it so much as a chore. Like, he's at this level now where everything's still new, where he's reading his textbooks and enjoying them. But as he gets older, he'll be like, oh, this is like boring homework. And like, he loses that sort of wonder.
Oh, that's too bad. Yeah, that's too bad. A lot to learn, I guess, in the wizarding world, and a lot is new and foreign to him. So I was wondering kind of if he even was understanding what he was reading, not fully. And I think later on in the chapter, he kind of shows some of that self-consciousness in, you know, all these people are from wizarding families and I'm kind of, this is all kind of newer to me. And Ron eventually says, like, don't worry about it.
Mm-hmm. So literally the day before, Harry's like, oh, crap, I need to get them, the Dursleys, to take me to London. Like, he did not breach this for a month.
Right.
Which, again, if I were Hagrid, I would have picked Harry up, given to what, how the whole thing that went down on the Shack on the Rock.
Yeah, that it almost doesn't make sense now that I'm thinking about it even more. And I guess it's, maybe that's why I had a bit of a block about it, because I was like, oh, and then Harry, or then Hagrid just took him to Hogwarts and all was fine. Well, that didn't happen, because then we have to go to the, we have to meet the Weasleys trying to get to the station. And then Uncle Vernon is very flip about it. He's like, oh, I guess we're going to London anyway, so we might as well drop you off. It's kind of rude.
Yeah, and they're going to London because they got to get rid of Dudley's pigtail.
Right, before
and
he goes.
Like, what story are they telling the doctor? Unless this doctor is also, or either is a wizard himself or knows of magic.
Yeah, I wonder, that would be an interesting, like, how did
I'm
that
I'm sure someone's
work
written
out
that fanfic short story.
Oh, yes, I bet that would be.
Okay, so they say, you know, Harry explains to them that his platform's at platform 9 3/4. And then, don't talk rubbish, said Uncle Vernon. There's no platform 9 3/4. It's on my tickets. And so they go to King's Cross Station. And I forgot about this, but Uncle Vernon is surprisingly nice to him by wheeling Harry's trunk all the way into the station, all the way to the platform of 9 10.
Yeah. And then he also, like, I mean, honestly, I was surprised that they helped his trying to find they like loaded his stuff into the car. To me, that was even surprising. Harry's huge and heavy trunk had been loaded into the Dursley's car. I was like, who did that? I feel like that would have been like Harry's responsibility to figure that out. But so there's a little bit of kindness here, and I don't really know why. But
well, it's what it's for is basically a hat. Uncle Vernon's pretending to be really nice to Harry and help him get to the platform, but then he just, you know, stops and be like, look, there is no platform 9 3/4, and then just leaves poor Harry.
Yeah, have a good term, said Uncle Vernon with an even nastier smile. Like, so this was all just a ruse to, like, abandon a child at his train station? Like, again, yep. Where was child services?
Yeah, and not even child services, where was Hagrid?
Yeah, exactly. He's like now Harry's child services, Hagrid is.
Hagrid should have helped him, because Harry realizes, like, he's getting a lot of attention because of Hedwig, because people are probably like, why does this 11-year-old kid have an endangered bird of prey?
Right. I'm thinking about the movie portrayal, which is what I saw in my mind's eye. It's not like a kind of ordinary little cart of things. There's an owl in a cage, and it's kind of all kind of awkward looking. And here's this young kid with all this stuff. And yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, and so fun. He's like really, Harry's like freaking out. Like, none of the muggles at the train station like know how to help him, and he's panicking. There's only 10 minutes left. But then who does he bump into?
Oh my gosh, this is the Weasleys. Yes, okay. Ron, I can't think of them all. There are several. The
Yes, there are
wonderful.
many of them. And so
Right.
he basically, follows them, and Molly Weasley, the mother, is so sweet in letting in telling him how to get on the platform.
That it's I think that if I understand correctly, there's like an affection for the Weasleys, and they kind of take him in eventually, if I remember.
So basically, there are four boys going to school. There's Percy, the oldest. We've got the twins, Fred and George. We've got Ron, the youngest boy, and then we've got Ginny, who is the o youngest and only girl of the family, but she's not old enough to go to school yet.
How much younger is she than Ron? A
By just
year or
by one
two?
year,
Oh, okay.
or probably a year and a half, like school years wise, like she will start school next year.
Okay.
So Harry takes Molly Weasley's advice and just runs into the brick wall, and there is the Hogwarts Express.
Yeah, I guess he kind of sort of saw people running into the wall and being okay. I would be a bit nervous to do that, and
Well, I
I
think he saw that Percy and Fred and George were able to do it.
Yeah, so he felt a little better about it, but either way, if somebody's telling me to run into a wall, I'm gonna be like, okay, is this gonna work for me? I don't know.
Yep, and then again, platform 9 3/4. Harry tries to again, can't lift up his trunk with his scrawny little 11-year-old malnourished body.
Yeah, right.
And so Fred and George help him, get his trunk into his compartment, and they realize, oh, you're Harry Potter. Which I think this is, although he got a lot of attention in the Leaky Cauldron, they were all from adults. And so this is the first time, like, sort of kids at school, his peers, are realizing, holy crap, it's Harry Potter.
And then I think Jenny's like, I just want to look at him. Like, I was like, oh my goodness. Like, just want to stare at him.
Fred and George go back to the platform, and Harry can overhear them. It's like, Mom, do you know who that was? That was Harry Potter. And Ginny's like, oh, can I go see him, Mom? Please, please. And she's like, no, a boy is not something you gawk at in a zoo.
I liked that. That was pretty funny to say. Yeah, because I guess, I'm sure everybody wants to catch a glimpse of him because he is so famous, but I don't know.
And either Fred or George is like, never mind that. Do you think he remembers what you know who looks like? And I really like Mrs. Weasley because she's like, I forbid you to ask him, Fred. Don't you dare.
Well, because it's with those two, it's kind of like you never really know. They might just do it. So she
Yeah, she's like, I better not get another letter about you blowing up a toilet. And they're like, we've never blown up a toilet, but great suggestion, Mom.
Right. They're pretty ornery, which is lovely
Which,
to
yeah, they're
have
pretty
them do
ornery, and that's the opposite of Percy, the oldest one, or at least the oldest one in school, because he's like the prefect, he is the super rigid, like, rule follower, blah, blah, blah.
Right. He's very yes, he's a rule follower. He's making sure everybody's in line. And then they also have another brother who is studying dragons somewhere. Is that right?
Yeah, Charlie. Eventually, and I think it says a lot about Fred and George. Because even though they realize, oh my God, there's this really famous kid, they still like go and like have their like normal friends and like don't ditch their normal friends for Harry Potter. So in that way, I really liked Fred and George in that way.
They're not like just totally enamored and wanting to be in his like good graces, which
Presence
is,
and being
yeah,
very
that is
sycophantic and stuff like that.
right. It is admirable that, and then even eventually Ron, it's, I don't think Ron necessarily knows who he is when they kind of do they?
Or like he doesn't, because Fred and George play so many pranks and jokes that at first Ron doesn't fully believe that it is truly Harry Potter.
Right. He says, "Are you really Harry Potter?" Ron blurted out. Harry nodded. Oh, well, I thought it might be one of Fred and George's jokes. And have you really got? And then he shows him the lightning scar, which Harry's pretty open about that.
Which is interesting because, we will get to a point later in the books where Harry will get exhausted with his fame and stuff and try and hide his scar more.
Oh, okay. Oh, funny.
So it's interesting, especially like in the first few chapters when it's like the only thing that Harry liked about his appearance was his lightning scar because it made him unique. But then that unique thing is turns into a curse.
Yeah, okay. Well, I don't know. I guess it goes one of two ways with like those unique things about people's appearances. You like it or you love it more. I don't know.
So immediately, Harry and Ron have a very cute camaraderie where, you know, they're both as fascinated by the other. And because Harry's like, "Is your whole family like wizards?" And he's like, "Yep, most of them. I think my mom has a second cousin who is an accountant, but we never talk about him."
It's kind of a slam again. I was
Yeah,
like,
they
hey.
say they're accountants.
Yeah. So there's still a, I guess like a uniform, like kind of like muggles are not really, you know, and we just don't talk. Interesting.
It's like, "I heard you went to live with muggles," said Ron. "What are they like?" "Horrible." "Well, not all of them. My aunt and uncle are our cousin are, though. Wish I had three wizard brothers." "Five," said Ron. For some reason, he was looking gloomy. Okay. So, you know, Ron is not always people's favorite character within the fandom.
Okay, I didn't know
Because
that.
he has a lot of doubts, he has a lot of insecurities, and basically throughout the whole series, all of Ron's sort of not very nice moments can be summed up in this little monologue right here.
Oh, really?
So I'm the sixth in our family to go to Hogwarts. You could say I've got a lot to live up to. Bill and Charlie have already left. Bill was head boy and Charlie was captain of Quidditch. Now Percy's a prefect. Fred and George mess around a lot, but they still get really good marks, and everyone thinks they're really funny. Everyone expects me to do as well as the others, but if I do, it's no big deal because they did it first. You never get anything new either with five brothers. I've got Bill's old robes, Charlie's old wand, and Percy's old rat.
Okay, so that makes sense that where this is that like you said this paragraph is descriptive of some of the things because it seems to be mainly if from the what I remember is kind of rooted in jealousy is some of his issue. I don't know though.
Yeah, like I'm not sure if jealousy is the right word. Again, just the set. Yeah, well, I guess that's true. Like I definitely he feels overshadowed.
Okay.
And again, and even if he could do maybe the same things as some of his brothers already did it. So it's not wholly just wanting to live up to his brothers, but he also wants to be different and unique from his brothers.
Got you. I'm an Enneagram 4, if anybody knows what that means, and that's kind of a complex that I have sometimes, is I just want to be different. So I want to I so that's interesting, like foreshadowing in just that paragraph alone. I just want to say that I think Scabbers is pretty cool, and he's lucky to have him, especially here
Yeah,
in a few
like,
moments.
and so yeah, they continue like talking, and Harry goes in to get the candy. So, which would be your candy that you would want to eat out of all of these?
I would like the chocolate frogs or the licorice wands. I'm a psycho. I in my mind they were black licorice, and I like black licorice. So, I feel like
For
I'm one of
shame,
the few.
blasphemy.
I know. My husband said I'm the only person he knows that likes black
My
licorice.
husband
So
likes it too.
good. I'm glad
Yeah,
that
well,
it's.
my husband likes it because, again, he did spend some of his teenage years in Sweden, and so it's black licorice is a thing there.
Hey, I don't know. That's, but I think that I would not go for the Bertie Bott's every flavored bean. I have bought those, like, you know, that they make in this world. But I would like the chocolate frogs. I guess the little card is kind of a fun bonus. How about
Yep.
you?
I would want the cauldron cakes because I just imagine like a little like chocolate cake in the shape of a cauldron.
Oh yeah, that would be
Or
cute.
maybe like the cauldron is hollow and put a scoop of ice cream in the chocolate cake cauldron.
Oh man, you're making me hungry now. I haven't eaten yet.
And so, but the most thing I want would want the most is the licorice wands, but I do not interpret them as black licorice. Basically, I think of licorice wands kind of like Nerds rope, where there's the crunchy part that looks like the wood, and then the inside is gooey.
I would eat that too. I'm not just keyed into only black licorice. I'm all about licorice no matter what. So that sounds delightful.
Yeah, and it's really sweet that Harry, you know, shares all of his candies with Ron and tries to make Ron feel comfortable. And he's like, "I didn't have a penny to my name, or in this case, a knut to my name until last month."
Yeah, that's a part that we that you know Ron kind of hesitates to tell Harry that Well, he says something about getting scabbers and that his brother got an owl because he was made prefect, but they couldn't. I got scabbers instead. So he's really embarrassed by the family's, you know, lack of money. And Harry, can relate to that and therefore is trying to treat Ron as he would have liked to have been, which is very
sweet. Yeah. And then, you know, this little line made me feel sad for Ron because he pulls out like the sandwich and Ron says, "She always forgets I don't like corned beef." And so I think, you know, it's just a simple thing, but I think it just shows that, you know, even if you monetarily have the means to have a lot of children, even still, like, the emotional investment in each and every kid is very hard to accomplish when you get to, like, sort of 6, 7, 8 kids.
Absolutely. Oh, my gosh.
And my husband has 7 aunts.
Whoa.
But all of them, you can tell, have been impacted by that because there's only one of the aunts who has 3 children. All the others have 2 or less.
Wow. Yeah, that's, our families are becoming smaller and smaller. And, you know,
yeah, I just felt really bad for Ron in that little, you know, it seems like such a small thing, but the fact that, you know, again, Mrs. Weasley's so busy, like, meal prepping for everyone, right, that she can't take the little time and figure out, oh, like, Ron likes pastrami, not corned beef.
Right, yeah. She's probably just trying to get food in somebody's mouth. Like, she's just,
exactly. Yep. And so Harry tries to be gracious and says, like, I'll, like, trade you to let Ron save face. But it's just eventually they abandon the sandwiches and they start scarfing down the candy.
Can't blame them.
No. And so Harry gets his first experience with the chocolate frogs.
Yeah. Then we're talking about the trading cards, and he gets Albus Dumbledore. And I guess, like, there was a moment of me remembering that this is the first time he has seen Dumbledore. But, and then there's this kind of cute exchange as well. It says, but in, you know, the muggle world, people just stay in photos. And Ron says, do they? What? They don't move at all? And then Ron sounded amazed. Weird. I just thought that was kind of cute.
Like, I'm just curious. You know, I've thought about that, about, like, you know, I know it's fun to think that, you know, that wizards are just as fascinated by muggles, that we as muggles would be fascinated by wizards. But I'm thinking, is it truly realistic? Because they have to live so much of their life, like, avoiding muggles, they have to at least know a little bit about them to, like, you know, function in their society and evade them and not cause problems. So I think sometimes this incredulity that some pureblood wizards like Ron have about muggles, I'm thinking, like, you have to know at least some stuff because you couldn't live in this world otherwise.
Right, yeah.
But here, what does Albus Dumbledore's card say? Considered by many the greatest wizard of modern times, Dumbledore is particularly famous for his defeat of the dark wizard Grindelwald in 1945, for the discovery of the 12 uses of dragon's blood, and his work on alchemy with his partner Nicholas Flamel. Professor Dumbledore enjoys chamber music and 10-pin bowling. So I remember, even before they got the whole Fantastic Beasts franchise, I remember, maybe not my first rereading, but definitely one of my early rereadings as a kid, as a teenager, reading this part of defeating the dark wizard Grindelwald in 1945. And by that date, 45, I'm thinking, okay, so Dumbledore basically, you know, stopped World War II.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Like, I basically infer that, okay, that clearly World War II, there was some intersectionality with Hitler and Grindelwald and all of that. And by defeating Grindelwald, that had an impact on World War II finally ending for the Muggles.
That makes total sense. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Harry, like, is scarfing down all the chocolate frogs. He gets more trading cards, like Morgana, Cersei, Merlin, all the good stuff. And then who comes, shows up? Oh, is it Neville? Neville Longbottom, yes, shows up looking for his toad.
Yes, he does. Poor guy. Can't, his little...
Yeah, poor toad. Guy. I forget who said it. I can't remember which podcast or which person said it, but it was like, we all want to be Harry Potter, but we're all really Neville.
I'm definitely Neville. That's fine. But yes, yeah, that's a good
option. Yeah. And then, not only that, but more importantly, we get the introduction of a very important character.
Miss Hermione Granger, right?
Indeed. And, oh, let's see, where is it? Do He had just raised his wand when the compartment door slid open again. The toadless boy was back, but this time he had a girl with him. She was already wearing her new Hogwarts robes. "Has anyone seen a toad? Neville's lost one," she said. She had a bossy sort of voice, lots of bushy brown hair, and rather large front teeth. Okay, so there was this guy in elementary school named Kevin who decided that I looked like Hermione and therefore called me Hermione for like a year.
I mean, she's a great character. What did that bother you?
I can't even remember if it bothered me that much because, again, it was right. It was in fifth grade, so I was like 11 or 12 years old. So it was right on the cusp. I don't remember when it started, before I started reading Harry Potter or afterwards. But I'm just like, I guess I was a little annoyed by it because the fact that he was a rambunctious, didn't follow the rules, was disruptive. And I'm like, okay, just because I have like dirty blonde hair and actually care about my grades, that makes me a Hermione. Okay.
Yeah, that doesn't seem too bad. And I guess if he was basing it on the movie, the, oh gosh, Emma Watson. Not a horrible person to be compared to. I didn't think at all. She's a very, very beautiful person, which I'm guessing that was probably the movie had been out at this time. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I can't remember. And then rather large front teeth. And not that Kevin ever said, oh, your teeth are so large, but like objectively, like looking at my front teeth, like they are a little large, but to me, they're not in a necessarily a bad way or like an ugly way.
No.
And, no. And I think there's a lot of people who infer from the large front teeth that Hermione is supposed to be really ugly and people don't like how the adaptation of Emma Watson being so beautiful.
You know, that's, I guess this is kind of, I've also heard that there could be a thought that she might be, I don't see anything about skin color here. So I've seen Hermione drawn as a little black girl, which is cute.
Yes, there has been some suggestion that maybe she could have been black because of so much emphasis is given to her bushy hair.
Yeah. So I just feel like there was a lot of room for interpretation of what she looks like in there. That's something that I've talked about like in Twilight, that they kind of, I feel like Bella is a shell sometimes, but because the intention was to have the reader kind of slip into that. And here it's maybe like open to imagination and interpretation without getting too super specific. I don't know.
Yeah. And then I think people cling on to the large front teeth as like the sort of quote unquote proof that Hermione is rather ugly and that, that the way that Hollywood cast Emma Watson was just another part of like beautifying otherwise ugly characters like Tyrion Lannister in Game of Thrones and stuff like that. Yeah. But quite honestly, I always felt that Hermione wasn't necessarily ugly in a physical sense. I was more the person who thought that because Hermione is so bossy and so like a know-it-all, that's what makes her attractive and annoying to people, not so much her looks.
Sure. I think that's a good interpretation of that as well. People always kind of step back from people that are a bit know-it-all-y.
Mm-hmm. Hermione's name becomes Mud with Ron because she embarrasses him because he can't do his spell. And he feels like his masculinity, his male pride has been wounded.
She's all about it. Like, she's like, all right then. Or like, you know, she's just like, let's do this. And then Harry tries to make him feel a little better eventually, saying like, well, I think his whiskers are a little different. I thought that was nice. But
Yeah. And then, so yeah, she's just like, you better get on your robes. We're going to be there soon. And they're like, can you please leave while we put on our robes?
That, yeah, she reminds me of some people I know, which is pretty funny. Even as an adult, I work with somebody who has a very similar personality to Miss Hermione Granger. So not saying it's a good or bad thing. It's just something that I'm going to say. I know somebody who is definitely like that. And it's like, lady, chill. That's how we've kind of been with her a couple times.
Mm-hmm. And then Hermione and Neville leave. But then who shows up?
Good old Malfoy.
And his cronies, Crabbe and Goyle.
Yeah. These two. Are they his, like, crew throughout this whole story? I mean, like, through all the books? Okay, they do. They don't ever go away because they're like his muscle or some kind of.
Yeah, basically he's the sort of mafia boss and they're like his henchmen.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Again. Yeah. So two-dimensional. Yeah, not great. More could have been done with them. But again, this is Harry's perspective, where Harry's just seeing them as, again, the henchmen of the really snobby, racist, blonde Nazi boy.
Makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Some people like to say that Draco Malfoy is so mean to Harry throughout the series because Draco feels hurt that Harry rejected him, like his friendship in this instance. But I'm just like, he wasn't honestly wanting Harry's friendship. He wanted Harry's fame and social capital to work with.
Yeah, okay. Because this is the part where it's kind of like, where he basically says to Harry, like, be careful who you're friends with. Your status might be, like, besmirched by who that you're hanging out with the Weasleys. No, you really, like, I think Draco needs to get off his bullshit because the guy is Harry Potter. I mean, I could understand, like, his kind of wanting to cling to him. I don't know. I this part was just kind of like, I was like, dude, you're so gross. Like, just get out of here. I understand, like, oh my God, there's a word I want to use, but I'm not going to use it. It's kind of a little bit of, never mind. Anyway, it's all very gross.
And Harry, again, not going to be cowed by this little brat, is like, I can tell the best sort for myself. Thanks.
Again, good for him. Good for him.
Yeah. And so basically they just want them to leave, but they won't. And then they try to abscond with some of, you know, the chocolates that Harry paid for.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And then Scabbers, in a act of valentry, bites Goyle's finger.
And that's why we like Scabbers. He's a good little rat, even though he's very sleepy and barely functional.
He literally fell asleep again.
It's okay.
And Hermione is up in there. It's like, you're not fighting. You're going to get us in trouble even before we get there. And Ron is like, Scabbers has been fighting, not us. All right, I only came in here because people outside are behaving very childishly, racing up and down the corridor, said Hermione with a sniffy voice. And you've got dirt on your nose, by the way. Did you know? And again, not that Hermione is doing herself any favors by coming across as very self-righteous or sanctimonious, but I can feel her, like, you just want to be a good student, go to school, and there are people screaming up and down the corridors when you're just trying to read your history and magic book. I get it.
Sure, absolutely. I can empathize with her wanting to have some order.
Yeah, it makes me think of there was this one plane ride. It was literally from my home in Oregon to, like, Salt Lake City to go visit my aunt. And again, only like literally an hour and 15 minutes. Oh, it was the worst flight I've ever been on. And that's including all sorts of flights, you know, to Cairo, to Rabat, to Istanbul. What made it so bad was there was a toddler that just screamed nonstop and the parents didn't do anything about it.
Ugh, yeah, that's hard to deal with. You know, I think kind of I've been on a flight where there have been some women who were just completely hammered and just like kind of acting like some of these students on the flight, just carrying on and raising hell. And it's like, ladies, please just shut up for 5 minutes. Like, not all of us want to, you know, some of us are headed to a meeting, not for a good time. Oh, you're giving me flashbacks to some of the plane rides I've had. So,
oh my God. Like, that's so, like, I'm not above, like, you know, I remember a few flights, you know, I went to the bar beforehand, had a little green apple martini, but I could still contain myself and just, you know, read or write my journal or, like, you know, not become belligerent on the flight.
Right. Yeah. I had no problem with that. But I think I was on the way to a work meeting and they were going to party. I was going to give a presentation.
What were you going to Vegas or what?
I was at Nashville. Like, Nashville's a big party.
Okay, now I get it. Why?
Yeah, it was weird.
Music the capital of the world, probably all sorts of concerts booked, backed up.
Yeah, it's a big, I did not know, it's a big party place for some folks, and they were starting early.
And so they finally arrive at Hogwarts, and it's so pretty. It's basically this castle carved out of this mountain.
Yes, and they pull up, and they need to get have to get on a boat to get over. Isn't that right?
Yeah. And it's a sort of ceremonious thing because only the first years do this ritual of arriving at Hogwarts via the boats because everyone else just goes in the carriages.
Okay. Okay.
So it's like part of the magic of your first year. Your first time going to Hogwarts is you go over the lake.
That's, and I know that's depicted, I think, in the at the front of the book, there's like this giant squid in the water. So that kind of tripped me out. I was just thinking of all the creatures in the waters around Hogwarts.
Yeah, we'll get to the giant squid later, but honestly, the giant squid is really friendly and really nice. And in fact, there's one book where a kid falls in the water and the giant squid just gently brings him back out.
I don't know why, but that just gave me the chills, because that just like giant squid just sounds really scary to me.
But yeah, but the giant squid in the Black Lake at Hogwarts is a really nice dude.
Okay, good. Good. I have nothing to fear.
So again, they go into the sort of cave-like harbor, like basically beneath the castle. And of course, is anyone there to greet them yet? No, they just... But Neville finds his toad, Trevor.
Yeah, Trevor. Funny name for a toad, but holding out his hands blissfully, then clambering up the passageway in the rock after Hagrid's lamp.
Do you like to name pets after like actual like people names, or give them cuter names?
I just, you know, my cats are, one is named after a fruit, and one is named after like a Hindu god. So I kind of am a little random with my sorts. And then I've also had a dog named Jenny. Jenny in the book. So how about you?
Yeah, I think it's Trevor the toad, like trying to keep with the T's. But yeah, okay. I tend to, if they are actual people names, they're of historical figures like Sir Francis Bacon, aka Mr. Bacon. I'm not going to name my like cat Howard.
To each their own. I think that's kind of funny. I don't know what I would name my next pet. I think I wanted to name it after Sherlock Holmes' dog, Gladstone. So
nice. And that's the end of the chapter, basically. They walked up a flight of stone steps and crowded around the huge oak front door. Everyone here, you there, still got your toad? Hagrid raised a gigantic fist and knocked 3 times on the castle door.
Ooh, lot, as usual, a lot happens in those couple chapters.
Yes. Yeah, these chapters were like double the length of the previous ones.
Yeah. But so much going on.
Indeed. So, shall we move to Gothic Geek Out?
Yeah, let's do it. Well, I don't have a lot of Gothic things to, I guess, the arrival at the castle. I mean, that's a huge Gothic castles. Like, that's kind of goes hand in hand. And then just the mention of a vampire, as me loving Gothic monsters, that made me pretty happy. But I don't know, going to buy school supplies, I guess some of the items were, it was more magical. So for me, the two would just be the mention of the supernatural creatures and then the arrival at the castle. Did you have any other Gothic elements that you found?
Like, this was not very heavy in Gothic, as you said, but the one thing I sort of thought of as being more Gothic is Gringotts, just by the nature of going deep, deep underground for all this hidden treasure.
That's a good point. Yeah, that is a kind of a Gothic-y. And I remember, you know, when reading this a while ago, I thought Gringotts was really creepy. So,
yeah. Which, and again, very creepy because of the goblins. And then also, I just thought of this by extension, again, the poetic justice of Harry the orphan ends up becoming rich. That's so in line with, like, Jane Eyre, who ends up inheriting a lot of money, and some other Gothic heroes and heroines, or, like, even Charles Dickens with Great Expectations.
That is a great point. That is very very Gothic-y thing to have happen.
Oh, my God. Harry Potter is so much like Jane Eyre.
Yeah, that's weird. Now that you say that.
I was not thinking about this when I thought of discussing Gothic elements.
That we'll have to just like, we'll have to remember that throughout, because you're exactly right. There are a lot of Jane.
And the only thing that I guess would kind of be not so much Gothic as in more classical literature is the Hogwarts Express.
Okay.
The classic, like Stina mentioned, because honestly, what I thought of is, you know, in certain Gothic stories or classic literature, you know, the train station ends up being an important symbol, again, of journey and transition or transformation and stuff like that. And so, like, when I thought of it, I thought of Anna Karenina.
Yeah, that's a great, that's a great literary reference.
Yeah, who ends up dying most brutally when she jumps in front of a train. Spoilers, sorry, anyone?
Yes, oh gosh.
And then, by extension, I recently, you know, on Sublimely Gothic, we discussed the Shadow of the Wind book, but I read Zaphon's other book this month, The Prince of Mist.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's basically a story of this kid where they're in Spain. They move out of the city to kind of escape the chaos of World War II. So they go into the country. And so they go into the train station, and some gothic things happen in the train station where they adopt a black cat who is kind of shady. And then they, when the kid looks back at the train station's clock, the clock moves backwards.
Whoa. Okay. Interesting.
So yeah, like for the, there are a lot of books like both classical and gothic where if, you know, if it's set in a time frame where trains exist, like the train station or the train itself can take on, you know, some, a lot of symbolic meaning. And of course, also made me think of, again, Woman in Black, the movie version where Daniel Radcliffe is, gets hit by the train, and it's, and all the comments are like, don't you know, Harry, Hogwarts Express waits for no one.
Oh my gosh, that's pretty cool.
But yeah, that's all I, that's all I've got. Again, not too heavy on the gothic, because again, it was all happy, going to the bank, going nice scenic ride through the countryside. So yeah.
Yeah. I'm glad we've got, we continue with the orphan theme.
Maybe the leaky cauldron, kind of grubby pub. Maybe that could also be put in gothic ambience, but yeah. And then what about you for quotes?
Oh, for quotes. Okay. I think I've read a lot of them, but let me look real quick. You know, okay, for the, from the first chapter, from chapter five, that I think this was just a little bit of foreshadowing, and I checked with you, and it eventually does become something, was the something really extraordinary had to be inside this top security vault. And the only reason I kind of commented on that or highlighted that is because of the foreshadowing and indicator that there was something more that we would eventually learn. Hopefully the thing that I didn't know was it, would it be in this book or would it be your books? But that's really kind of all I had from that chapter. I mean, there was a lot that happened in this chapter, but the quote wise, I was pretty slim on it. How about you?
Yeah. My favorite quote was the last four lines of the Gringotts poem. So if you seek beneath our floors a treasure that was never yours, thief, you have been warned, beware of finding more than treasure there. And I think that's a good quote about greed just in life in general. Yeah. That, you know, a lot of times if you try to reach too high, or if you're too, you know, greedy and stuff like that, then, you know, be careful what you wish for, because you may get that, but you also may get something else that might not be too great.
Right. Yeah. No, that's a great quote.
Yeah. It's a good life lesson. But at the same time, I'm also thinking about, you know, the ways that that sort of sentiment, it's good in itself, but it can also be exploited by the powers that be to be like, don't you dare dream anything else for yourself.
Yeah. Dream within these parameters, but don't go beyond.
Yeah. Because I actually started reading a nonfiction book that I picked up at Goodwill called Blood and Roses.
Oh, okay.
Which it's about this one family in England in the 15th century, and I've only read the intro, but what's interesting about it is talking about there was so much social mobility after the Black Death hit England, because there were parts of the, you know, England where like 2/3 of the population had been wiped out. And so because there weren't so many people anymore, peasants and laborers could suddenly had the leverage and the ability to negotiate for higher wages with the feudal lords.
Okay, interesting. So,
and like a lot of feudal lords like really didn't like this, and they tried to, the royals tried to create policies to try and keep like wages at the pre-plague level, but of course it didn't work. You know, they still had to negotiate. So this, all this allowed for certain social mobility. And again, the instance of the powers that be realized this was happening and tried really hard to create policies that would prevent that social mobility. Didn't work, like still it happened, but yeah.
Interesting.
And then finally, our last exercise, fan fiction time.
Okay. Now I always feel like maybe I pull something good here, but maybe these are things that have always been discussed. But I think that, you know, I was really hung up on what if Harry didn't spend that month in between with the Dursleys? Like, what if he just went to Hogwarts? How would have that, would that have changed? You know, I guess the kind of butterfly effect, he may not have met Ron early on. Maybe he would have been, I don't know, maybe he would have gone stir crazy and wouldn't have appreciated Hogwarts and the kind of like magic of the arrival with his fellow classmates might not have been there. So that was one. That was for that first chapter is one of them that I thought. The other one, if you want me to carry on, was what if he did befriend Malfoy? Like, what if he met him and thought, like, yeah, I'm going to kind of go this direction and hang out with this guy, how that might have changed the story. Those were my only two things.
So, yeah, if Harry had not, gone on, just arrived, stayed at Hogwarts for a month, mm-hmm. I like to think that if that happened, he would have basically just palled around with Hagrid and Hagrid would have shown him everything. Maybe he would have met some of the teachers beforehand. But again, it would be hard to tell exactly how his friendships would have developed with his peers by not having that journey on the train with them.
Yeah.
So the way he would have met all of his peers, or his male peers, would have been in the dormitory.
Okay.
So, yeah, I don't know if he met all four of those boys at the same time, because the other boys in his year in Gryffindor are Seamus, Dean, Ron, and Neville. So I don't know if they were all presented together, whether Harry would gravitate one more towards the other.
Interesting. I mean, yeah.
Something. Yeah. And then if Harry had befriended Draco Malfoy, I like to think that Harry would have just befriended Draco Malfoy in the beginning purely as a means of, this is not so much for Malfoy's power or social status particularly, but more a sense of, this is a very, he's a good wealth of information for me because I know absolutely nothing about this world.
Okay, so more of a, like, just a resource to kind of understand.
Yeah, like try and understand, but then as Malfoy got more and more shitty, then I would like to think that Harry would still be like, screw this.
I would hope so as well. And I think given that his kind of what we know about him, that would have happened, but it would be weird.
So my fanfic speculations are, what if Harry was still poor?
That's a good thing to think about. Do you think, well, I mean, he has his name as far as like being well known, but yeah, that's interesting. I don't know.
I like to think that if he was poor, like there, I know like deep Potter trivia, like there is like a reserve at the school for students who need assistance with books and stuff. So obviously like maybe in the first year or so, he would have gotten secondhand robes, secondhand books and all that sort of thing. But I would like to think that because of his fame, like if that were to sort of get out, I would like to think that maybe certain charities or organization would donate to his education because he's basically this savior to everybody.
Yeah, I think that that's something that, just based on everything else that we know around him, he probably would have been okay. Like somebody would have made sure that he wasn't, didn't struggle in that regard.
Mm-hmm. And then my other one, what if Harry did not sit with Ron on the first train ride, but with another character?
Yeah, then that friendship, I mean, would he have eventually been friends with him? I mean, sometimes it's just like it happens that way. But what if he was sitting next to Hermione or Neville or somebody like that? I don't know.
I think if he had sat with Hermione, maybe he would have seen her as maybe a little annoying, but I think he would have been more charitable to Hermione than Ron, because again, Harry can bond with Hermione in the sense that they both didn't know that magic exists. And I think maybe he would be more forgiving of like her overzealousness because again, he can understand that perspective.
Remind me, she doesn't have any like siblings. It's just her, right?
She's an only child.
Okay.
And then I'm trying to think, if Harry had maybe sat with Neville, maybe he could have bonded with Neville, because Neville's kind of the sort of like bumbling, forgetful sort of. I would like to think Harry would have a little more, not that Ron isn't a good character, at his core, but again, because of all his insecurities, he does think about like, class and at the very micro level of school, of popularity and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So certainly if he were to have befriended Neville, it would have been like totally like screw like everyone.
Yeah.
Like screw everyone. I'm just going to befriend, who I like. And, that's that.
Nothing wrong with that. I mean, he kind of has the name and kind of already the knowledge that people already know who he is. So I feel like he can kind of do what he wants in some regards. So,
yeah, like I feel that's, yeah, I've definitely, by the nature of his fame and his wealth, I'm certain that he was already kind of sassy beforehand, but even still, it's just like, I have fame and I have wealth. You can't do crap to me. I'm going to do what I want.
Yeah.
Alrighty then, and that concludes episode 3 of the Rambling Raven Puffs. Tune in next time, guys, and we will go over chapters 7 and 8, The Sorting Hat and The Potions Master, where we get very important information about the houses and meet a certain professor that we all love to hate.
I think I know who that is.
Exactly. So, tune in next week, guys. Catch you guys later. Bye.
Bye.